It's 12 noon. I'm Jim Packard. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks very much for being with us today. Coming up after the news, we'll be talking with Barbara Ellis. She is a writer, editor, and author of many books, and the co-author of a new one with Karen Davis Cutler. It's Burpees, The Complete Flower Gardener, published by Wiley. Whether your intention is to raise a bed of dahlias or an army of roses, there are nearly 500 glossy pages of expert advice in this book, The Complete Flower Gardener. Everything from choosing your garden space, prepping your soil, battling bugs and blights, to producing perfect flowers organically. That's the mission of Barbara Ellis and her co-author Karen Davis Cutler. We'll be talking about the book, and we'll be offering some advice for you for your flower gardening here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The news is next. Hello, I'm Jim Packard, in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today. We're having some difficulty locating our next scheduled guest, Barbara Ellis, the co-author with Karen Davis Cutler of Burpee, The Complete Flower Gardener, published by Wiley. We'll continue to try to make contact with her. It is a nearly 500 pages of expert advice in a book that deals with the comprehensive guide to growing flowers organically. It sounds like a wonderful topic, and hopefully we're able to make a connection with Barbara Ellis. She was once the publication director for the American Horticulture Society and editor of the American Gardener, and was the managing editor for garden books for Rodale Press. Her earlier books include Taylor's Guide to Growing North America's Favorite Plants, Deckscaping, and Shady Retreats, and she tends an organic garden on the eastern shore of Chesapeake Bay. And Carmen Jackson will continue to see if we can come up with a connection for her. But until that time, we might as well do an open line and take your suggestions for some gardening programs that you would like to see broadcast on Wisconsin Public Radio's Garden Talk that Larry Mueller is the host of. Larry's off golfing this weekend, so he's having a great time somewhere in the southeastern part of the United States. The number here is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. And we'll be happy to take your program requests for future garden talk. And maybe we can talk a little bit about things that are coming up in the next couple of weeks. But again, that telephone number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, 800-642-1234. That is our toll-free number here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's go to the phones, and we'll go to our first call in Russ County in just a second. And that would be Nellie. And Nellie, what's on your mind today?
Well, I just caught it. You know, so much of your reference is to online, and you don't want to forget us souls that either can't afford or don't have access to the Internet.
Well, Nellie, I think that since libraries are now fully equipped, public libraries are fully equipped to be able to do this, it is available to you even if you don't have a machine at home.
Well,
and I would also suggest to you that the amount of information that you can access in a couple of seconds is just wonderful. That's really a great resource and something that you should probably take advantage of.
Well, I will have considered that, but I'm 10 miles from the library, so it isn't very convenient. But thank you for listening to me anyway.
All right, Nellie. Thanks very much. And one of these days, maybe we can include you in the online audience as well. If you'd like to get your question, your suggestion in, I think that we do have our guest who is coming online. And we'll be able to talk to her about Burpee, the Complete Flower Gardener. Nellie's complaint, of course, that we're leaving the audience behind that doesn't have access to the internet, and in a way that's true because there is so much available there as a resource that you cannot ignore it any longer, and most people are now equipped to be able to handle that kind of thing. But let's take some phone calls, and we'll start off with our host, I thought. Hello? Barbara, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Very good. Thanks so much. You were once the publication director for the American Horticulture Society, so obviously you can recognize a good gardening book when you see it.
Uh-huh.
And I think that you'd probably say that you've got a good gardening book here.
Well, I'm really pleased with it. Karen Cutler and I worked really hard on it, and I think it has a lot of information in it that's new and different, because one of the things that Karen brings to the whole process is she loves the history of all the plants that she's growing, and she did an awful lot of searching to get new information about plants out there. So
The one thing that I was curious about is that I read in the book that Georgia O'Keeffe is renowned for her paintings of flowers, but did she hate flowers?
I am not an expert on Georgia O'Keeffe, but that is what I've understood. She really, I mean, she obviously, everybody is familiar with the images that she painted of them, but perhaps like any artist, she looked at them as an object and not as a is something that she wanted to grow. And many of the flowers that she grew were not easy to grow in her part of the country, in the Southwest. So,
and she would have preferred to paint people, but couldn't afford to hire them?
That is what Karen found out, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it gives you a whole new appreciation for the work that she did.
Uh-huh.
Because if she wasn't, you know, wholeheartedly embracing them, it's got to be a rather interesting distinction to paint them.
You'd certainly never guess it from looking at the paintings, would you?
No. But let's talk about the book. Let's talk about what's included in it.
Okay.
And you've got nearly 500 pages and beautiful photography. But break it down for us.
Well, there's obviously a really good encyclopedia in it, and that's probably half the book. It's got entries on everything from Achillea to, let me look and see what the last one, Zinnia. It's got, in that section, it's got perennials, it's got annuals, it's got bulbs in there, and it's very specific about what kinds of plants are in a particular genus and how you grow them and what are the best ones to grow. And then in the front of the book, we have all kinds of information on planting a garden and getting the most out of your garden. There's a chapter on basic terms that are helpful to know when you're reading a catalog or when you're looking on the internet for information. It has just kind of basic information about what a botanical name is and what you need to know for that. And then it has chapters on how to prepare soil to have a really good, to have the basis, which is the basis of a really good flower garden, plus chapters on how to mulch and how to feed plants and how to care for them through the season. And then I think one of my favorite parts is the whole section on specially designed gardens, like a moon garden.
Or a butterfly garden.
Or a butterfly garden. Those
yeah,
really
that was the section I had a marker on, because a fragrant garden and under a tree garden.
Uh-huh.
We get a lot of questions about what people can do under the canopy of a tree where a lawn may not grow.
Right.
And suddenly there you have. You also have an edible garden. A hillside garden. In fact, they're just gardens for every sort of interest I could think of. Everlasting,
well,
woodland garden.
One of the things that really helps in that regard is that we do have lists of plants that will grow in those situations. And the best place to start a new garden is finding the plants that will grow best there, rather than oftentimes people go to a garden center and they pick out this pretty flower and that pretty flower and this other pretty flower without really paying attention to what those plants need to grow well. and we're kind of turning it around and say, okay, these are plants that will all grow well under a tree or on a hillside, and that's a good place to start making sure that you have a successful garden.
All right, and let's see about taking some telephone calls. I want to make sure that we get some callers into this as well. Joe is in Wausau, and Joe, what's on your mind?
Hello, I was curious to know why the Burpee's name is in the title. What do they have to do with the book? I know they sell seeds, but I just wondered what the connection was.
Originally, there's three books that we have done in this series, and Burpee didn't really help with the preparation of it, but they endorsed it as part of the endorsed it, and they sell it in their catalog, I assume. I haven't looked through their catalog this spring yet, but so it's basically an endorsement. And we also did a vegetable garden book in the same series that they endorsed.
Okay.
Give you an answer?
Kind of, yeah.
All right. Joe, thanks very much. I assume that you're using Burpee because people will recognize the name.
Absolutely. It helps focus it, and it also focuses. Burpee is a good supplier known for having a wide range of course, vegetables, but also flowers that they sell. They sell all the plants that are in the book, and it's just a good recognizable company. And they wanted to have a really good high quality book that they could say this is the Burpee Guide to Flower Gardening. So
all right, this just came out last fall, I believe, did it not? And so for gardeners who are really enthused about their flowers, why, this is a book that they should be looking for at this time of year, I would imagine.
Yes, yes.
One of the other things I noticed, there are lots of little factoids in this book. For instance, when the pilgrims arrived from England in 1620, did they bring in lots of seeds for ornamental plants?
They mostly brought practical things, but there still were some things that they tucked in. You know, there's always rooms for a couple of seeds if you're a serious gardener. But an awful lot of the things they brought with them were practical ones that they could use.
Mm-hmm. And in that plant portrait section that starts with aquilegia, is it?
Yes.
That's nothing that I've heard of before. Can you describe aquilegia?
Let me turn to it so I can actually look at the page. So I can tell you a little bit about the aquilegia is probably better known as columbine, and I'm not. It's better known by most people as columbine, and they're the flowers that have they have five petals, and then they have most of the plants we grow have five spurs that stick out the back of the flower. Maybe the best known one is the native red and white or red and yellow columbine.
Yeah.
That
we have a yellow columbine in one of our gardens.
Yeah, the one you'll find in the woods is canadensis, but there are lots of hybrids. One of the great things about that genus of plants is there's some really wonderful colors. There's red and yellow, there's really intense blues, there are whites, and there are all kinds of different colors. They're also, it's a group of plants that's really easy to grow from seed, and they self-sow. Once you have them in the garden, they self-sow, and you can keep the seedlings that you like and move them around if you move them when they're really little. They don't really appreciate being dug and moved around a lot, but that you can do that with little tiny seedlings.
Barbara Ellis is the co-author with Karen Cutler of Burpee, the Complete Flower Gardener. It's published by Wiley. You can get more information at burpee.com, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Do the two of you have a website together on this?
No, we don't.
Okay,
we do
so
not.
At burpee.com you'll find out more information about that book. Tell us about your garden. You are there on the eastern shore of Chesapeake Bay?
Yes, my garden is still fairly new. I've been here for 3 years. I started working on this book, I was still up in Pennsylvania, but we've moved down to the Eastern Shore, and so right now I have, we're renovating a house, and so I have holding beds, and I'm kind of waiting until all the workmen leave so I can start dig in beds near the house, but mm-hmm. I have, we're a little ahead of you, so I already have hellebores up in bloom. Some of my little bulbs have passed bloom already. As I say, I'm just itching to get things planted near the house. I've also been up digging. I've been separating daylilies and moving them out into spaces where I can. Eventually, I'm going to have a fairly big area right around the house. It's all kinds of flowers, from herbs and perennials to annuals and bulbs that are right near the house. And then farther out, I think I'm going to just plant wildflowers because I'd rather have more lower maintenance and less work farther away from the house.
Well, I would imagine that many of the gardeners listening today are a little envious in that you're a few weeks ahead of us then in the gardening schedules.
Yes, well, just remember, I'm in Zone 7, but in the summer we suffer more than you do because it's awfully hot and humid down here. So there are some advantages and some disadvantages, but I think it's, I just love the beginning of the season, no matter where I am, because I've lived in several different zones. I just love that rush to see things coming up and to start moving things around and dividing things that need to be divided and getting new annuals in the ground. And it's just such a good time of the year for that.
How do you make a distinction about planting a plant or starting from seed?
I do it by how quickly things come up or how difficult it is to find plants in terms of finding sources for them. I really don't have a lot of patience for plants that I have to tend in pots for years before they go into the garden because I have a big garden and it's hard for me to keep track of those.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I do is I start an awful lot of perennial seeds. And what I do is I sow the pots, I sow fairly densely in a pot, and I mulch them over with a small, like, pea gravel, very, very small pea gravel. They sell it in pet stores to put in aquariums. And then I set the pots outside in a really protected location, maybe in a cold frame to keep snow off them, and I just leave them. And that way I don't have to water them, I don't have them inside under lights, and I just let them come up whenever they come up. Now, for annuals that I want to grow, one of my favorites is lemon gem marigolds, which is a very tiny, it's a really pretty marigold with a very small flower, and they're hard to find. The garden centers around here don't carry them. And so I do grow those, and those I start inside in individual pots because I can't find them any other way. And they have it's a really pretty lacy-looking plant with masses and masses of little tiny yellow flowers, and it's just one I can't find that I really want to have in the garden, and therefore I'm willing to fuss with them.
We tend to link compost to growing vegetables, but I imagine that in the organic setting, compost is necessary for flowering plants too.
It's, you know, compost is, it's just essential in my garden anyway, and I use it on the few vegetables that I do grow, but I also it makes fabulous mulch. It's you can mulch right around plants and also feed them at the same time. You can, and any kind of soil, it improves any kind of soil. And in my current situation where I haven't had very much time to improve the soil, I have sandy clay here, and organic matter, which compost adds, is really, really essential to making it better and more rich for plants to grow. And also, compost holds moisture in the soil. But if you have clay soil, it also breaks it up and it makes it drain better. So it's whatever kind of soil you have, it improves it. And whether you're growing vegetables or flowers, composting is really a good thing. And if you haven't started composting, one of the other advantages is an environmental one, is it reduces the number of bags of leaves that go into landfills. I know lots of composters who go around in the fall and collect bags of leaves that are sitting on curbs because they need them for mulch and for making compost.
Let's go back to the phones, and I believe it's Jeannie. Hi, Jeannie.
Hey.
What can we do for you?
Well, first of all, I was wondering if your guest has any knowledge about setting up a moss bed. I have an area that's primarily shade in between two houses, and there is a canopy of bush, a big red leaf bush, and that shades it a lot more than it should be, too. But I'm trying to get something neat like moss on the side of my landstone steps, and my clothesline is out there, and I just need that little path that it won't be traveled much. Does she have any luck with moss? And then I have a second question if she has time.
I have some areas with moss. I haven't actually started making them into entirely moss gardens, only because my garden is fairly new. Do you have moss growing there already?
Yes, little bits of it, but I tried the buttermilk with a little clump of moss, but that didn't seem to do much, and what a mess.
Well, it's one of the things that is supposed to work. One of the things that's really difficult after that is you have to keep the site misted and damp for quite some time until the little tiny moss plants grow. One of the things that people have had luck with is simply weeding out all the non-moss plants. I don't know how big this area is. I have heard, and I have tried this, that you can actually use Roundup on it, and moss doesn't get killed by Roundup.
I don't think there's much of anything but mud and a few patches of moss, but it's only about 3 by 8 feet.
One of the other options is to transplant small, kind of spread your mulch out. One of the things that you don't want to do if you're trying to establish mulch is dig the soil up, loosen the soil up, because moss actually likes fairly compacted soil. And if you loosen up the soil, you're going to get more weeds.
Oh, really?
Yes. Okay. It's kind of a surprise. And actually what I've read and what I have done in the past is just do it on a day when you don't want to have to do very much physical. Sit down and start pulling the weeds out. It's a fussy kind of a project, but you can if you slowly encourage the weeds, the moss instead of the weeds, you'll get.
Yeah,
it seems
to be mostly packed mud, but I'm glad to hear that I don't have to loosen it up.
Right.
But what did you say to put on there? Mulch?
Mulch on there? No, you don't need mulch.
Well, what did you say? You said you put something on there.
It's not something that I generally recommend, but I know people who have used Roundup. And
I don't need that. There's no weeds in there.
So there's no weeds, so you don't need to worry about that.
But I thought you said some other thing before that, and I wondered what that was to get it started.
Transplanting small plugs and then keeping it moist is the best way to do it. It's just a slow process. You can also buy it, but you generally do better if you start with moss that's already growing there.
And Jeannie, good luck to you, and hope that it turns out well for you. Barbara, thank you so much for spending time and introducing us to Burpee, the complete flower gardener.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Good luck to you. And if you'd like more information about the book, you can go to burpee.com. Barbara Ellis is a writer and editor and author of many books, and she was our guest on Garden Talk. Monday after 11, Dr. Jeff Anders is along to discuss mental health issues in adults, and Dr. Dick Niles has some warnings of skin cancers and melanomas here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.